And of course, our special guest, John Major Jenkins, will be back with John. We'll take your phone calls for the entire hour next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, John Major Jenkins, our guest. John, your appearance, of course, on the History Channel, aren't you going to be in a documentary in January of just a few weeks away?
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that. I went to Chichen Itza with the History Channel in September, and it's really going to be an amazing documentary. It's part of the Decoding the Past series, and I think it's probably going to air more like in mid-February, but I think it's going to be a great presentation about, on ideas about 2012.
Excellent. Well, let's go to the calls because they're all lining up to talk with you. We'll go to our first wild card line. Welcome to the program. Hi there.
Yes. Hi. Good morning, gentlemen. Oh,
yes,
this
sir.
Is fascinating. I missed the first part, so make sure you mention those titles of his books, particularly with Terrence doing the foreword. I mean, anything that he would contribute to, I know I'm going to love. Very great show. But I have a comment and a question. I'd like to know, and George, this is very synchronous, because just before tuning in, I picked up Velikovsky's Worlds in Collision.
Oh, sure.
So,
yeah,
so
you talk about
comment. But I want to know if he's familiar with people like Ivan Van Sertima, who, and other scholars like him, who give us a focus that we're really misaligned when we don't go both to the root of our of humanity in terms of coming from Africa, and also the role that the Olmecs played because certain information by seeing what they look like and the fact that they contributed to the language. You know, actually gave the Mayans a language. And lastly, I'd like to know the modern-day Mayans, how do they keep the traditions? The structures are absolutely awesome. Speak about the Temple of the Sun and the Moon, and how do they keep that knowledge and of the calendar? And I'll listen to the air. Really, really appreciate the show.
Okay, and the book that you are very interested in is called The Maya Cosmogenesis 2012. We'll talk more about that this hour. Go ahead, John, if you want to combat some of those questions.
Yeah, those are intriguing topics. I'm aware of a lot of independent research, and I think that, you know, pushing back the fringes of knowledge usually takes place by, you know, independent thinkers working on the outside. For example, Gerald Massey was a researcher who wrote in the 1880s, 1890s, and he wrote some magisterial volumes on the origin of civilization out of Africa. And he's a really, really interesting, integrative thinker. Now, the temple sites and how the modern Maya keep the knowledge, that's a good question. There has been a process of forgetting, and especially with the sort of traumatic events of the conquest, it's been sort of a difficult thing. However, there are manuscripts that preserve the sacred knowledge. The pictographic manuscripts of Mesoamerica were designed to preserve the sacred knowledge, and that's something that I've been involved in recently with my book, Pyramid of Fire, came out just last year. It has to do with the knowledge that was encoded into a pictographic manuscript that was unknown until an acquaintance of mine, Marty Matz, decoded it. He was living in Mexico in the 60s, and it was shown to him by a Mazatec shaman. So this is just one way of how the knowledge survives. And one thing about it, though, that's important to remember is that this kind of knowledge is a sacred knowledge. It's like a perennial universal wisdom. So even if that wisdom is forgotten, it's by its own very nature being universal and eternal. Those principles of spiritual growth and so on are bound to reappear at some point.
John, tell me about the cover of the Maya Cosmogenesis. It's a fascinating cover. Tell me about the theory of it and what we're looking at.
Yeah, I came up with that cover design. It's a little complex, but basically in the foreground on the lower left, we have a monument from Azapa. It's carving number 11, and that is really an amazing portrayal.
And in reality, how big is that monument?
It's about 4 feet high.
Okay.
And it basically shows, and viewers can see this on the website too, it's basically portraying the December solstice sun god in the mouth of the Milky Way. So it is literally a depiction of the 2012 alignment. And on the cover of the book, you have the alignment going on in the sky over the horizon.
What is the village there that we see?
Oh, well, that is actually, it's supposed to be Azapa, but it's a photograph that I took of a Maya site called Sayil. So for the purpose of the cover, it's just representing a temple observatory.
And is that a huge structure? Because it looks like you must have taken it from the top of a hill a long way away.
Yeah, it is a pretty big temple, Sayil in the... there's some pretty big temples there in Yucatan.
Okay, next up, let's go to our West of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, this is Jonathan Zapp. I was actually your guest on March 7th of this year, and John Jenkins is actually one of my closest friends.
All right, Jonathan.
Hey, John.
Hi.
We live close by in Colorado, and we've even toured some of the Mayan ruins together and done some DVDs together. And I've got a question for John. You already mentioned your connection to Terrence McKenna. We actually met through Terrence about a decade ago. And Terrence, in his study of the I Ching, saw that as we were traveling through time, and he felt this was mapped out in the I Ching in a kind of fractal time wave, that we were fluctuating between two great variables that he called habit and novelty. And I wonder if you could connect these variables for the listeners to the date 2012 and the cycles of time that are mapped out in the perennial philosophy.
Wow. Well, I think that Terrence's insight is really important, and that is that time, the quality of time fluctuates from day to day. So in other words, every day is not the same. And we kind of know this intuitively. We know in our own experience that, you know, some periods of time are more intense than others, you know. And so Terrence in his theory, which was based upon numerological examination of the wave of the I Ching, he believed that time is moving towards a great singularity or concrescence, as he would call it. In other words, there will be a moment in the historical timeline when novelty, as he would say, maximizes. And in this, in his theory, then that would be like a great transformation point. Now, in his work, he did choose the date 2012 before he even knew about the Maya calendar.
Really? How about that?
Yeah, that's one of the strange synchronicities here. And then this was in the late 70s, and somebody told him, well, you know, that's when the Maya calendar, the 13 Bakhtun cycle, turns over. So in terms of how Terrence's theory relates to my own, we do share the 2012 date. My work focuses on the alignment process. So I believe that it's the change is more along the lines of a process-oriented shift, and whereas Terrence's theory, the nature of the time wave, it ends precisely on December 21st, 2012.
John, the galactic alignment that we're talking about that occurs every 26,000 years, does modern science agree with that?
Yeah. There's an astronomer, Jean Mius. He's a European astronomer, very respected. He actually calculated it in his book, Mathematical Astronomy Morsels. And, you know, so it is a real astronomical process. And I've taken a very close look at it. And, you know, astronomers and scholars don't really have much to say about it.
All right, next up, let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air with John Major Jenkins on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Oh, sure can.
This is Ronnie from Hershey. I listen to your show a lot, George, and tonight I just had to call. I'm a stargazer myself. I have studied astronomy. I have a degree in biology. And right now I want to bring you all up to the present because we are going to lose 1 minute of time at the end of this year, 2005. And the closer we get to the center of the Milky Way galaxy, we are going, the Earth is actually slowing down. This is why we're losing 1 minute of time from our year.
That's pretty dramatic, isn't it? One minute or one second?
This has been published. We are going to be losing time. The closer we get, my own theory is the closer we get to the center, the Earth is slowing down, because if you visualize the whole galaxy as a swirl, like a big giant donut with a hole in the middle, the closer you get to the center, you slow down. This is with anything. And the further out you are, the faster you're going. We are losing time, and it's starting now. This year, the atomic clocks are going to be adjusted 1 minute behind.
All right. Now, John, you think it's a second. So we got to...
It might be a second. We are losing time. Now, next year, we will lose more time. And up to 2012, we will be losing time. And also, because of the Earth slowing down, when you asked about earthquakes and volcanoes, et cetera, the Earth is adjusting. The Earth, as a living thing, is adjusting to this slowdown and this coming to the center of the galaxy, and it is going to be producing earthquakes and volcanic action, and there's going to be other tsunamis, et cetera, because of this slowdown effect.
Okay, well, let's get your reaction to that. Thanks, Ronnie. And it is 1 second, not 1 minute. John, you are correct there.
Yeah, I'd heard about that a couple of weeks ago. That's a fascinating thing. It's not surprising. The Earth is generally slowing down. The rotation of the Earth on its axis, we call it 24 hours, but over, you know, many, many hundreds and thousands of years, the Earth is gradually slowing down. And as Romy said, it seems to be entrained to the larger process of our movements through the galaxy. And I think that she's right on target there with, you know, the angular momentum is what they would call it. You know, the spinning of the Earth, the crust of the Earth and the liquid magma inside of the Earth is all going to be shifting and going through changes as the Earth slows down.
All right, first time caller line, you're on the air with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Kent from Austin.
Hi, Kent. Go ahead, sir.
Y'all have kind of touched on it a little bit. Did I understand that the Mayans made the prediction from the first century B.C.?
Yes.
Okay, it's been a while since I looked at the timeline, but how did they get from B.C. to 2012 A.D.?
You mean just calculating forward some 2,000 years? Can you go a little bit further into the question?
Yeah, it's been a while since I've been in a class, but when people were living in the time of B.C., were they counting the years backwards to the time of Christ?
Well, we do in our current calendar. We, you know, the calendar that we have, you know, B.C., the Maya would have placed themselves in the seventh baktun of their time system.
Did they, John, come up with the date 2012, or did we interpret it to be 2012?
Right. Well, sure. That's basically 2012 is in our own calendar system. So when scholars correlated the Maya calendar with our own Gregorian calendar, then we're able to label it 2012. But
okay,
the long count system operates in its own sort of methodology.
Could it be off by a few years?
No, because that's the correlation question, and scholars have looked at that very carefully, and they were able to figure out exactly how the Maya calendar correlates with our own because of star positions and moon positions on the monuments, as well as like carbon 14 dating. So that was a real big effort by scholars working over 20, 30, 40 years. And so, yeah, the whole question of is it really December 21st, 2012? That's an important question. And I have documents on my website that they're sort of like support files for some of these questions that come up.
It's a good time for you to mention the name of all your books because people want to know them.
Well, the Maya Cosmogenesis 2012 came out in 1998. That's the one that Terrence McKenna wrote the introduction to. And then the follow-up was Galactic Alignment, the Transformation of Consciousness, according to Mayan, Egyptian, and Vedic traditions, came out in 2002. That was like the follow-up book. So it really looks at Mithraism and the Hindu tradition and Egypt and so on. The recent book came out last year is called The Pyramid of Fire, which is about this unknown Aztec manuscript that my friend Marty Matz transcribed at the behest of his Mazatec teacher. And it contains spiritual teachings about the end of time, the spiritual ascent at the end of time.
Does anything talk about the God or you know, Jesus at all? I'm curious to see if they were aware of that too.
Well, in a sense, Quetzalcoatl is a deity figure in Mesoamerica that it goes through a very similar process that Jesus went through in terms of a rebirth or a resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really an important sort of archetype. And that's where I look when I'm looking for teachings or prophecies about what 2012 is about.
Because it could be one and the same, right? Possible?
Well, on a symbolic level, I think. But, yeah. I mean, you mean Quetzalcoatl and Jesus, one and the
yeah,
same person?
Yeah, one and the same, yeah.
Well, I suppose on a sort of a symbolic or archetypal level, it certainly seems to be manifesting the same sort of principle of resurrection, and which is just to say that it's about the second birth or the birth of the initiatory birth of a person into reconnection with God or the higher wisdom.
What's the time period of Quetzalcoatl's existence?
He first emerges in about the 2nd century AD at Teotihuacan in central Mexico, but there's a lot of mystery around this figure because it seems like he was a historical person, but then he also has these sort of deity-like qualities as well.
Did he just appear on the scene?
I have a cosmological theory about Quetzalcoatl in terms of his astronomical references, and I go into that in my book, Maya Cosmogenesis. Like many of the deities in Mesoamerica, the process, their processes and their stories, their mythologies are encoding astronomical movements and astronomical events, while at the same time they provide spiritual teachings.
All right, stay with us. We'll be back with final phone calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, get ready for the weekend of your life. A two-parter, Art Bell Live tomorrow and Saturday, his annual predictions program. And then I'll be live Sunday, January 1st, while you sit around and take it easy, listening to a different version of predictions. I think you'll like this, too, because we will have for you Joseph Jacobs, Dr. Lewis Turry, Sylvia Brown, the Merlin Project folks, Hans Christian King, Gerald Salente, Robert Camp, and the Luciferian, yes, Aaron Donahue, all talking about events that they see in the years to come. We'll be back in a moment with final phone calls with our guest John Major Jenkins and you on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. John Major Jenkins, our guest, and your phone calls. Back to the calls we go. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Very, very interesting show today. I'm really glad that I'm listening. There are a few dots that I'm connecting here, and I was hoping the guest could sort of draw a picture that I'm creating. I'm noticing the number 26,000, and for one thing, that's we're nearing the end of the 26,000-year cycle. Also, I looked on the NASA website. We're 26,000 years, light years, from the center of the galaxy, and there's a precession of 26,000 years. And so I was just hoping that the guest can illuminate that.
Yeah, touching upon something that's intrigued me for a while. I have a chapter in my book, Galactic Alignment, where I go into this. It is a strange, call it a coincidence, or maybe it's a pointer to something more interesting, that we are basically about 26,000 light years from the center of the galaxy, and precession, the wobble of the Earth on its axis, the Earth wobble, is 26,000 years. Now, when I was looking at this information on all of this, I discovered a principle of subatomic physics. It's called proton precession. And the rate of a proton's precession will be directly related to the strength of the magnetic field that it's in, as well as its distance from the source of that magnetic field. Now, if the galactic center is the source of a magnetic field, which it is, we exist, we are in the field of the galaxy, then there does seem to be some kind of entrainment or relationship between the distance and the rate of precession. So I think that the caller's onto something there, and it would seem to me that scientists should know about these kind of things should get on it right away.
I think so, too. West of the Rockies, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hello.
Hi, my name is Barbara. I'm calling from Gardena.
Hi, Barbara.
For your guest, I saw a special a couple of times on the Maya, and at the end of that special, a Mayan guide says, one of these days they're going to ask us, talking about the archaeologists, what this all means. So what I want to know is how much of information is available from indigenous sources as opposed to the non-indigenous interpretations of the Maya script.
Yeah. Well, in terms of the end date information, that is a tradition that was fragmented and lost even before the conquest. This tradition goes back, some 2,000 years. And my first approach to trying to understand something about 2012 was to look at, modern ethnographic accounts that were being gathered, reports from modern medicine men and wise men of the Maya. And unfortunately, there was really nothing there to be found about that was saying anything about 2012. Now we have the creation myth, the Popol Vuh, or Hero Twin creation myth, that was recorded in the 1550s. So in a sense, that is an account or a record that was recorded by Mayan elders at that time. And that is very insightful. That actually provides us with the teaching about what happens at the end of the age. And the creation myth is one of my primary sources that I use. And my work, of course, is, involved in reconstructing the cosmology. And, by necessity, it's necessary to sort of go back and piece things together in sort of an archaeological way.
Okay, thanks for the response and for the question. Next up, let's go to our wild card line. It's your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello, my name is Richard from California.
Hi, Richard. Go ahead.
I was just calling in to talk to John. I was present at the 2004 Signs of Destiny. With Arguelles and you as a keynote. I was fascinated by the whole conversations that took place there and everything. And since I've left, my the main question I kind of left with was kind of like a, maybe like a synthesis question of how to synthesize Dr. Arguelles' work with your work, or kind of more like how would you approach his you know, his work, and as far as the work you've done, and you know, because your work is very scholarly, very how can I say, professional and accurate as far as dating and history and all that. So how do you look at like a work like Dr. Jose Arguelles'
Well, who is he, John? Who is he? Want to explain who that doctor is for us?
Jose Arguelles is an author and a visionary who wrote the book The Mayan Factor. And that was kind of a breakthrough book in 1987. He was also involved in the coordination of the harmonic convergence event that happened in that year. Since then, he's written a few other books, and he has put forward a system of his own sort of modeling that's based on the Maya calendar system. It's called Dream Spell, the Dream Spell system. And there's I believe that I like to make a distinction. There's visionary work being done that sort of strives to like model the Mayan calendar in different ways, but there's a lot of sort of like personal model making that goes into some of these systems. And I've always been interested in critiquing research and books that come out, and I think it's important to do that as we are trying to understand more deeply what the Maya calendar is really about. We should be having conversations with each other and, you know, debating the points of, you know, that are being brought out. Now, one of the, you know, early critiques of Arguelles' system that I had was that the day count that he was using was of his own invention. And it was out of synchronization with the traditional authentic surviving day count from the highlands of Guatemala. And I thought that that was a point that needed to be brought out and, you know, looked at clearly. So, and another thing is, this is all part of the 2012 phenomenon, where there's going to be a whole spectrum of writings and research and, you know, visionary ideas and dreams and novels.
It's going to be like Y2K almost all over again, John.
It's a whole spectrum of things, and I think that Jeff Stray, with his book Beyond 2012, has really done something amazing in terms of pulling it all together and sort of explaining all this whole wide range of ideas in a really clear way. And one more thing real quick is that that was a really important conference that took place. Chet Snow put that on in Tempe last year, and I do have the 3 DVD set from that conference available on my website.
Okay, which again is alignment2012.com?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. East of the Rockies, your turn. Hi there.
Nighthawk.
Yes, sir.
Hey.
Anybody who says Nighthawk remembers me from my old St. Louis shows.
Indeed. I have one of these petroglyph sites here. It's fully open to the west, so I can follow the setting sun all along the horizon.
Mm-hmm.
The Mayan calendar has to work in somehow the lunar cycle.
Yeah.
That runs on, I think, a 19-year cycle.
Yep.
I have no idea. I can't get to the cave myself now to try and watch for these alignments at this point, as far as other where things are actually fixed on the petroglyph stone.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's fascinating. You know, if I don't know if you can get online, but there's a archaeoastronomer named Nal Morris, N-A-L Morris, and he has a whole method for calibrating these petroglyph sites. He lives out in Utah, and I think there's a lot of archaeoastronomy going on especially in the Rockies. And I don't know, what state are you in?
He's in Illinois.
Oh, in Illinois. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's a petroglyph site in Illinois. Interesting.
Lots of things in Illinois.
You should try to get there on an equinox or a solstice and just sort of look to see where the sun is on the horizon and see if there's any important lining up points.
A lot of people, by the way, on the 21st, get together and converge themselves. They've been doing that for years. It's almost become almost like a fad to do that.
Well, it's a natural energy shift point in the year, and of course even Christmas and the New Year's celebration is based upon the winter solstice as being a time of renewal. And the way you started out your show tonight, George, had to do with New Year's resolutions.
Yes.
People still intuitively feel that it's the time to sort of let go of the old year and to make goals and commitments and envision what you want your highest sort of potential to be in the new cycle.
Let go of the old, bring in the new. First-time caller line, you're on with us. Hi there.
Hi, my name is Bob. I'm from Texas.
Hi, Bob.
I have a quick
go
question
ahead.
For sure. Mr. Jenkins, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay.
Now, in 2012, in this galactic alignment, do you think any other planets will be visible like that we've never seen before?
I don't think so. You know, there's a whole theory by the Binary Research Institute that our sun is part of a binary star system. And that's a pretty intriguing theory. It's based upon some ancient documents and so on. But the alignment itself is really an alignment of the entire frame of our solar system and how it lines up with the galactic center. So, no, I don't think that the alignment itself is going to uncover any other planets in our solar system.
All right, let's go to our West of the Rockies line. You're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello to the both of you.
Thank you.
My name is Mary. I'm calling from the state of Washington. And I was wondering if your guest there has heard about a book called Quest for the Lost City by Dana and Ginger Lamb.
No, I have not.
Okay, it's I came across the book actually from meeting Dana when I lived in the state of New Mexico. His wife had already passed on, and it's been so long since I read the book, I really can't remember a lot about it. I do remember, and their car broke down, and they walked in to the jungles down there.
Oh,
and,
I am familiar
with that
book. Yes, that's an amazing book. I do. You've jogged my memory, Mary,
right.
And that is a. I think it had to do with they took a journey down to the Chiapan rainforest.
Yeah, that name sounds familiar.
Yeah,
and they stumbled into it, huh?
They went into the jungle and they went around on forest paths and they actually uncovered some previously unknown Mayan ruins there.
All right. Well, it's been going on for a long time. Wildcard line, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi. My name is Arlene, and I'm calling from Canyon City, Colorado.
Hello, Arlene. Go ahead.
I have a question for your guest. Discovery had a program on within the past year on the aging of God. Have you found any indication in the Mayan cosmology of a new perspective on the nature of that which we call God? And I'll take the answer off the air.
Okay, that is a deep question, Mr. Jenkins.
That is a very deep question. What I see at Azapa especially is that there was a new revelation about the nature of deity. In other words, at Azapa, you have alignments to the Big Dipper, which was Seven Macaw, the vain and false ruler of the previous world age. And that was the polar god. But then with this whole alignment cosmology that they were projecting forward to, they realized that there was this larger perspective. And so they realized that God would no longer be the vain and false ruler, seven macaw. In other words, and that's really a perennial truth, that at the end of a cycle, egoism is running rampant. It's ruling and ruining the planet. And this is really what I call the prophecy of 2012, and you find it right on the monuments of Azapa. It's right in the creation myth. So the old god is exposed as being false, and the new deity is the one that aligns us truly with our higher wisdom, our true selves. And that's really what the 2012 alignment is about in terms of a spiritual teaching.
Do you believe the Maya has, that they perhaps had the most influence on our future than other past civilizations?
Well, I think that the Mayan civilization does have a very special kind of providence in how its wisdom is, it promises to integrate with the momentum of our own Western civilization. Like it's almost like the scientific method and the shadow side of Western civilization. It's kind of run its course. And I guess what I'm trying to say is that I think that the Mayan civilization can offer some long needed new wisdom to Western thinkers.
But you do not believe in the doomsday catastrophe theories?
No, I do not believe that. I don't believe that because in the primary documents, like the creation myth, it's always about transformation. Now, nothing's graven in stone, and each person's experience will be different. What it sort of boils down to in terms of how, you know, two people in the exact same place can be experiencing that place in completely opposite ways, depending on where they're at internally. So it's always about whether we choose fear or we choose openness, or say love. Openness to the unknown or fear of the unknown.
John, circle the calendar, December 21st, 2012. You're going to be on Coast to Coast.
All right.
Appreciate you being on the show, and you have a good new year, John Major Jenkins.
Thank you, George.
Guy who knows his Mayan civilization information, doesn't he? For Dan Galante, Nikki Imbrunoni, Steve Carr, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, you have a happy new year, everyone. Until then, be safe.